Arctic region might be small on the map, but it's increasingly becoming a hotspot for energy innovation. Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia are modernizing their grids, digitizing their energy systems, and setting an example of how smaller nations can lead the energy transition. As renewables become a larger part of the generation mix, the grid becomes more volatile, and that's where battery energy storage systems come into play. They act as fast response stabilizers, smoothing out fluctuations and ensuring a reliable supply of electricity. To unpack this topic, I'm joined by Michael Hirholzer, VP of Strategy, Business Development and Product Management, and Armin Föderer, VP of Sustainable Customer Solutions at Rolls-Royce Power Systems. This episode is brought to you in partnership with Rolls-Royce Power Systems, a German company at the forefront of innovation for more than 100 years, helping to power, protect, and connect the modern world. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Armin, Michael, thank you so much for joining me today. We're talking about battery storage in Latvia, which I think is quite exciting because we seldom cover the Baltics. So I'm really keen to get into the details of this. But my first question, I think, is more broad, and that is in terms of the Baltic landscape and the opportunities that are coming about because of the energy transition. Michael, would you like to tell us more?
Yeah, surely. I mean, it's a very exciting market for us to currently be in. I believe there are mainly three main drivers that we see in the market that are making this so interesting. One, of course, is the energy mix that is changing quite quickly and quite different. So you have Latvia on the one hand, who relies heavily on hydro and biomass. Then you have Lithuania, who has recently scaled wind at an impressive speed, Estonia moving away from oil shale. So all of those developments are, of course, very great for decarbonization, but it also means, of course, that the system has less inertia and more variability with it. Then you have, of course, the market dynamics that are quite unique. You have very extreme price fluctuations. So sometimes even have negative pricing when strong renewables output coincides then with the imports from the Nordics. You have interconnections to the Western Europe that are limited. And of course, there isn't a too big of an industrial baseload in the region. So the grid can't naturally balance itself in that way. And then, one of the most important and most recent topics, the BRELL disconnect or the European synchronization. So as we know, after February 9th last year, the Baltics pulled the plug on the old Soviet Union system. So with that now, the Baltics have fully synchronized with the continental Europe grid. That was, of course, long-term in the making, I believe, since they joined the EU in 2004. And of course, a huge step forward into energy security and independence. But that means, on the other hand, of course, also that now the region itself carries the full responsibility for its own grid stability. So I would sum it up as really fast renewable growth, volatile markets, and then, of course, the full post-BRELL responsibility that turned the Baltics now into really one of Europe's most demanding power systems, but also one that's highly attractive for battery energy storage solutions like ours.
Yes, I'd like to touch on that actually just a little bit further. You know, you mentioned now the disconnection from the Soviet grid. Mm-hmm. What impact has this had in terms of maintaining the 50 hertz frequency?
I mean, the impact was quite significant. With the disconnect, they turned the stability from external dependency to primary local responsibility. So once the Baltics left the BRELL ring, the grid had less synchronized inertia, so to say, which means that frequency deviations now happen much faster. And as we know, in a relative small power systems or in an environment like the Baltics, now even minor disruptions can quickly then become system relevant. And as a result of those fluctuations, they need to be managed locally and very quickly using local assets. And this is exactly where then the flexibility of fast response technologies like battery storage systems come into play and play an essential and critical infrastructure role. I think here it's important to note, though, that battery solutions often or in general do not replace generation. They're more so there to stabilize the renewables heavy system post-BRELL. And that is then done whether through frequency containment reserves, so stabilizing the frequency deviations in real time, frequency restoration reserves, that happens then within minutes, or also reactive power or voltage support that's becoming increasingly important in the region.
So clearly the market was ready for storage interventions. Tell us more about Latvia's first grid-scale battery energy storage system.
Yeah, maybe as an add-on to what Michael said before, I mean, what was never done before was basically disconnect and synchronize the grid in that magnitude to a main grid, especially as the pan-European grid, because there is no trial out, so it needs to work from the first time without any problems. So that is what Michael said, maybe an add-on that is the first time ever made, and it happened and it worked. Yeah, but when we talked to them, that was very exciting for them when you pull the switch and synchronize and it works, because the consequences if it not worked then it would be a complete blackout. So that was very demanding, nerve-wracking for them. So I think that was also when you ask what was the impact of the disconnection, basically does it work? I mean, that was one of the main challenges for them. In terms of why did Latvia was ready for the first grid-scale BESS system, because exactly of that. I mean, Michael mentioned all the reasons, from renewable impact, the whole flexibility in the grid, disconnecting from one, connecting to another. And that was the main reason to have that. Every major market in Europe needs battery in order to be flexible. That's the same for Germany and other European markets where renewable takes a bigger and bigger role year by year. And that is not different in the Baltics. Obviously, they had an additional challenge connected to the main grid, where Germany is already connected or is the center of it. And the good thing is, in the Baltics, a very pragmatic approach. The bureaucratic hurdles are not that high, so they are more pragmatic and speeding when decisions are made. Therefore, AST, the operator, could install a battery system even though usually it's separate between a utility and a grid operator. But because of the importance of the whole project and the impact on the grid, it was decided to do that for a limited duration of time. So for 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, and then they handed over to the utilities and they are now connected to the European grid.
Armin, you say they needed the system in such a short time, and this was really a pioneering project. Would you say that there were specific challenges that came along with this project, as is often the case with first-of-a-kind projects? Tell us a little bit more about that, if there were specific challenges, and the role of Rolls-Royce in really combating those challenges.
I mean, in general, for all projects, challenging is always you need to have the right partners in order to be able to overcome challenges, because every project will throw challenges at you at one given point in time. So what we really had, we had with our partner, a very good EPC partner, which we together successfully installed and handed over the project in roughly 18 months. The challenges at the beginning, of course, all the regulation, all that stuff which you have to comply to is always challenging. What is good compared to other markets in Germany, the Baltics are very highly digitized. That means everything is going via platforms. You have digital approvals and so on. Basically, no paperwork at all. That makes a lot of things easy, but at the same time, since the speed is so high, it brings you new challenges when you are not used to that. The good thing is we adopted quickly and in the end basically enjoyed that way of working as well. Also the pragmatic way which we had with our end customer AST, how we approached the project together. Everyone had the success of the project in mind and found always solutions to upcoming problems, such as you can't deliver it because the road is not accessible, some crane is not working, so find another one. So these kind of things were handled very pragmatic and in a straightforward way. Obviously, in the Baltics, you have challenges with the environmental conditions, because in the winter it's so cold that you can't do groundwork, so no ducting, no cabling, nothing is possible. We see that now in other projects in the Baltics. Therefore, you have, from a project management point of view, build your schedule around these kind of obstacles and still be in time. Yeah, there's something which is somehow challenging, but on the other hand, if you ask the project manager, that's part of the job to do it in the right manner. But overall, we as Rolls-Royce, and that is what we are stand for, we are providing end-to-end service and we take care of every problem which comes along and not backing out of it. And I think that makes somehow also the difference. If you are a bigger company, you can tackle bigger problems easier and swallow a few things if necessary in order to never jeopardize the end goal, which is a successful project in time and money.
I can only imagine what it's like to tackle some of those project challenges in minus 30 degrees. I believe that was the temperature that you mentioned when we were preparing for this podcast. So definitely unique. But tell me, Armin, also when we were preparing, you mentioned that in terms of the performance, the system exceeded expectations. Give us a little bit more information about that.
Basically, maybe it's a German habit as well. When we're designing the projects and then do the technical layouts, we usually have the tendency to put a little bit more buffer in our calculations, and then we can have a conservative approach what the technology can do and how long it can last and stuff like that. So in the end, when we did the testing with the customer together and with the grid, the product were performing better than expected. So we had a little bit more performance here and there, and that also gave us the confidence that our calculation was right and we could even stretch it further in the future. So we are learning on that front as well. But we did not think that the products of our partners were even performing better than what the data sheet basically indicates. That we do see on many other projects now. And now we are a little bit more aggressive when it comes to sizing because we know how much, I would say, reserve we have on our backend. But that's also comforting our customer in the end, because he sees, okay, what is written on the data sheet really is there, even if it's a little bit more. So that gives them confidence that over the 20 years, which these projects usually should work, that give them confidence that it actually really will work without major intervention. On the other hand, it's also the performance of the people and the partnership that we basically, as I mentioned before, performed on an execution level really good with our partners, with the end customer. And that is something which you usually do not see at that scale. That's always goal-oriented. So that was different to a lot of other projects which I did in my past. That was exceptionally different in this case. Because maybe also the customer realized that it's very important to be in time and we serve a greater good in the end. Sometimes you had that feeling.
Indeed. Thank you, Armin, for sharing that with us. Michael, I want to bring you in again just to talk a little bit about cybersecurity. Obviously, battery energy storage systems are considered critical infrastructure, which is a priority. So how do you mitigate these risks? And I think Armin touched on the fact, you know, the Baltics are highly digitalized. Tell us a little bit more.
I mean, that's of course right. I mean, you mentioned rightfully it's critical infrastructure, and with that, cybersecurity essentially also becomes somewhat grid security, right? And so that made that topic always a priority for us, and especially in the Baltics region and the geopolitical situation there even more so. I think the good thing in the region is that there is already, due to those circumstances, quite a sensitivity around that. So the Baltic states are closely aligned with the EU NIS2 directive, so that helps, of course. And then, like Armin mentioned earlier, I mean, we're a pretty big company with quite a track record in other applications. So this also isn't new territory for us. I mean, we deal with cybersecurity on a daily basis, whether that's on the civil aviation side, to make sure everything is safe and sound there, backup for data centers or even military applications. So we, of course, also have the same approach then to our best systems, where we really start with a security from the start and by design sort of approach that goes through the entire system. So we use trusted European manufactured inverters, in-house control systems, in-house software, really critical part. Then try to minimize the reliance on non-European components in critical control layers. And then, of course, tighten it with very strict access control and good govern communication interfaces. And with those sort of things, we are able to mitigate the cybersecurity risk quite well. Ensure then that our customer is happy, that we have an operational sovereignty, if you want so, and that the whole system remains resilient long-term.
Michael, would you say that there were key takeaways from this project in terms of the technology or the system, mm-hmm. as well as the region's energy transition as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like Armin said, you know, it was a first in many ways, and I think everybody learned a lot. I mean, if I look at the project, what it demonstrated for sure, I mean, alluded to that as well, that grid scale batteries are essential and that they are core infrastructure and that they work and have a right to play, so to say. I mean, their role goes now way beyond classic, you know, frequency containment. It goes into voltage control, into broader system services. So I think there was a great proof point for the technology as such. Then you guys mentioned, Tuor talked about it, that the project clearly proved also our capabilities as system integrator. I mean, to pull a project off like this as a first time in the region under those conditions, under the timeline, and deliver something that made the customer very happy, I think was a great proof point also for us. I think as a result of all of this, this changes also how TSOs now operate their grids on a day-to-day basis. And of course, also how they're going to design that those systems down the road.
Armin, you touched on this earlier slightly, and there was a little excitement in your voice, actually, because you said that you felt almost as if there was a greater purpose or that you were working for the greater good on this project. Tell us more about what was specifically exciting for you about this project.
I mean, in general, it's good if your own work has purpose. Yeah, sometimes in daily life it doesn't feel like that all the time because of the circumstances, but here it actually something which you can somehow, maybe it's a little bit over the top, but you can tell your kids, yeah, we did something which helped a country, which helped the overall energy transition, because we installed systems which are used for grid stabilization and help countries to use their energy in the right way. And especially of the importance that a whole region was connected to the European grid, which is obviously not happens every day. And that somehow makes me proud, makes my team proud that we had a project which has such severe impact for a country. And you also felt that when we had the handover and the ceremony, everybody was very proud that all that stuff happened as planned in the time. Somehow also happiness, yeah, because sometimes projects are not so, I would say, emotionally connected, but here it was a little bit different. Also because of the overall team with the partners and the end customers was in such a good way that you really, or we were really happy for them that that project went so well. Because it was the first time for them. The synchronization was the first time ever. Yeah, in that's basically in that magnitude. All of that felt in the end very rewarding and different from, I would say, normal project where the impact on society and the grid and stuff is not so big.
Wow, that is special indeed. Thank you for sharing that, Armin. A final question to you, Michael. What is next for Rolls-Royce Power Systems?
I think first and foremost to support our existing customer base, continue to support the customers on site, AST, but also others that Armin and team are already working with. I think for us, it's very important that the job is not done, you know, once the system is up and running, but that we are there for our customers, you know, no matter what, until that system is ultimately replaced or decommissioned. Then, of course, replicate what we have proven in that region with the systems, whether that's now in the Baltics or the wider European market. I think there was a great proof point in many ways that we want to build on and that we want to replicate. What's also very important that we continue our journey on educating our customers, you know, on the importance of having a reliable, trustworthy, long-term partner with a good emphasis and track record in cybersecurity, lifecycle support, services. I mean, like Armin said, you know, a lot of it is about working with the right partners. You know, I mean, those systems, they last for 10, 15, perhaps even more years. And you really need to be aware of, you know, who you're dealing with and whether that is a good match, whether it's commercially or culturally, or then also on the operation side. Ultimately, the future power systems will reward partners that can operate reliably and over decades and not just, you know, pull off a one-time project and that's it.
Maybe as an add-on, what we want to be seen as is as a solution provider. We are not just integrating stuff and
exactly
parting ways. We are a solution provider and be a partner for a very long time and be always there to help our partners to overcome any problems they have in the future, and being a solution provider, so not bringing only the products, the whole solutions from finance to technology, engineering support, and whatever is needed.
Well, it's certainly clear that collaborating with the right partners can make or break a project. So thank you very much for sharing those insights. Michael Armin, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you today.
Likewise.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I mean, this has been a very great opportunity for us to not just show what we have done there, but also what we have done together with partners there. I think it inspires one or the other person, like Armin said, you know, especially this project and what's done in that region. You know, it's not just commercials, it's somewhat also history that's being made there, you know, with what's currently happening. And I think especially in a market or in a environment these days where there's quite some instability or insecurity, at least, you know, what we can do with our systems provide a bit more stability, a bit more security, even if it's just on the power systems or energy side.
Yeah, for my side, thank you for having us. It was a pleasure. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Armin and Michael. And thank you to our listeners. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.